You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey there, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are back this week, and we got a great, great show for you. You know, we've been talking about movies and classic movies and, you know, funny stuff, sad stuff, suspenseful stuff. And we decided it'd be kind of cool to take a little bit of a break. And we are going to be talking about music we are embarrassed to love. That's right, folks. We have so much to talk about. This might be our first 4.5 hour podcast. That's right. We're ready for it too. So please, you know, bear with us. We got a great crew with us tonight. But before, you know, we say anything else, this is the man I am never embarrassed to say I love, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy, and I am touched.
You should be. You know, you think about it, you lasted longer than my first marriage, so it's a pretty awesome thing.
Well, that's not saying a lot, but that's okay. I feel about the same way, you know, as you and your ex-wife, though.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. So, but, you know, we're on more amicable terms, so it's quite okay with
slightly,
that.
Slightly.
Yes.
Let's just say that some days I can understand her point of view.
A lot of people can. Trust me, a lot of people can. But that's a whole different story. So, you know, it's good to be here. It's good to be fun talking about music. It's been a while, actually, since we've sat down with Ricky and Bambi and Michelle. So it should be a lot of fun to talk to them tonight.
Yep.
So, of course, we definitely would love to hear from you at home, folks. Please let us know, what are you embarrassed to love? We want to hear your songs, your music. You know,
no, we don't. If it's too embarrassing, we don't want to hear it.
Oh, no, I want to know if people actually have Lawrence Welk on their list or such. Bring the bubbles out, Mr. Pokemon. Yeah. So I want to definitely see that. So please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. We would definitely love to hear from you. Of course, the show is brought to you by the fine folks at Tifosi. That's right, folks. We could all use a little extra protection this year. Trust me, 2020 is the year of extra protection. It is really, really tough. From the Saharans, sandstorms to mortar hornets. It seems that this year has thrown us all in kind of a curveball. Maybe to those people on doomsday preppers, we have something right for you. That's right. The folks at Tifosi have a 2020 survival essentials. You know, you have glasses to protect your eyes because your eyes are some of the most precious parts of your body and they're most sensitive. And, you know, with Tifosi optics, you can have, you know, glasses to protect from falling satellites, from dust storms, from hurricanes, from rain, from debris. You never know what could happen. And, you know, 2020 is just waiting to throw something next at us. And Tifosi is ready for you. That's right, folks. All you have to do is go to tifosioptics.com/2020/2020survival essentials. Or you could just go to their website and at Tifosi Optics and just click on the 2020 Survival Essentials. Nice and easy. And while you're there, if you go and put ESO Network into the coupon code, you will get a nice 10% off your order. That's not too shabby, especially when your eyes depend on it. Tifosi Optics, we are doing things to help you protect yourself for 2020. Pretty awesome. All right. And, you know, before we get started with anything else, I want to give a real big shout out to our friends over at our Patreon. That's right, folks. We have been doing more and more, and probably right after you hear this episode, probably by the time, you know, the weekend is here or is after it, we will have the new episode of the ESO Board Silly, episode 5. That's right, when the board members of the Earth Station 1 podcast join with the ESO board. And you know what? We talk about all kinds of goofy stuff. You never know what can be done about it. And you know what? For as little as $1 a month, you could hear it too. And that's not too bad and help support the ESO network, which is Earth Station 1 is proudly to be a member of it. So please check us out at ESO Network Patreon at patreon.com/ESO Network. All right, let's give a big shout out now to our next victim in the geek seat. That's right. We have somebody joining us, somebody you've heard over on Earth Station Who. Let's welcome Melanie Dean to the podcast. Welcome to Earth Station One for the first time.
That's going to be my answer. It's just non-committal noises of glee and excitement and, oh God, what did I sign up for?
We are glad to have you on the station with us.
Yay! Well, honestly, I am very, very happy that you guys are taking a chance on me and going, okay, let's hear from this chick again and see what she's got to say. And I'm like, okay, hopefully I bring good content and people don't turn stuff off and go, oh God, she's insane. I'll be entertaining.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that.
So we know who to blame if we get low ratings. Exactly.
Melody, for those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Basically, started off as a fixture in all the little comic cons in the Southeast, mostly in Florida, to be honest. I'm an artist. I am a portrait artist, very high contrast, lots of geeky kind of stuff. So you're going to see more pop culture, a lot of Doctor Who. Other TV shows and stuff that I like. Psych, I absolutely love that show. I have portraits of different scientists. I do pet portraits, all that kind of stuff. If it's a portrait, I'm going to do it. Then after doing the con rounds and getting to know my other fellow Whovians, I'm also known as a co-host on the Legend of the Traveling TARDIS podcast over on the Hanging With web show network or team, on the Hanging With team. And my amazing host is Christian Basil, and that's probably a lot where everyone's going to be knowing my voice from. So those are my two little things.
That's actually where I met you at, because I've guested a couple times on their podcast, and Christian's been, making me kind of a quasi-regular, mm-hmm. Including me in everything. And it's like, God, I must have, rubbed him the right way or something.
Are you available? Exactly. Yes. Get out of here.
Yeah, and I thought it was at 20 I slipped him, so it's okay.
How long have you been doing your art? Has it been something, a passion of yours from early on?
Pretty much. It's always one of those things where it's kind of dabbled in drawing ever since I was a child. My grandfather was actually a portrait artist way back when. That wasn't necessarily something that you could do in life. So he was more of a carpenter and mechanic by trade. But he was an artist. His family's that vein with my mother. Everybody just could draw, just to have natural talent for drawing. So that was something that through high school, college, started working on it. Did it more scenically than anything with theater. So it was like I kind of stepped away from it on a canvas and did more things architecturally or within a proscenium speaking. But now I'm back into staying with acrylics and canvas. It's a lot easier to paint inside my house than trying to go find theater, especially now. If anybody wants, something dry brushed, would you like a castle? I could go ahead and do that. I've been painting for quite a while. I've always kind of tend to go back to acrylic. For a while, I stepped away from that and I was doing sculpting a lot. So any type of foam exterior sculpting that you see, I was helping with quite a few friends out doing that. I mean, biggest thing I've ever sculpted was I think it was 1/8 scale P-41 Mustang. So the World War II aircraft. We actually sculpted one of those and hung it in a bar. So I really started getting into subtractive sculpting and that kind of fun. But again, a little easier to paint on a small-ish canvas inside my house. So I'm back into portraits.
Gotcha. And are you sort of working? You said something about, are you working digitally too? Mm-hmm.
When I first kind of got out of high school and into college, I think my first job really as an adult that wasn't behind a cash register or pushing grocery carts back up to the front was actually as a graphic designer. So kind of started my way staying in art, staying in graphics, worked through there, and then professionally went into sales and then marketing. So more so my professional career is as a marketing associate, but a lot of that's going to be a lot of graphics. So that's the one thing a lot of people don't realize when you're thinking about careers broad scope. It's not where you're going to end up being when you're young, thinking I'm going to be, an artist. Well, your path might end up being at art now that I'm 40, but it will travel in all these unique, different ways of I used to do the theater art, and then I do graphic design, and now I'm doing the marketing art, now that Comic-Con. So it goes that trajectory, but it ain't a straight line. It's all over the place. But art's always been there.
Yeah. That's cool. And that is really awesome. How did you get roped into the world of podcasting?
That would be Christian Basil's fault. Flat out. I hope he's listening and know that this is all his fault. It was just going to cons, talking to people. A lot of it would always start off, being in an artist's alley. You're always behind a table and people see your art and you know that, hey, if you painted that, then we should be able to talk about that. And most people kind of do that, especially in artist's alley and just in the geek kind of scene. Is most people are going to paint what they love. People are going to draw what they know. They're not going to really go, oh, what's selling right now? Oh, okay, I can do Avatar. I've never really watched Avatar: The Last Airbender. I know it's on my list, but you're not going to start seeing me start cranking out, you know, Aang and Zuko art. I just don't watch it. So because I've got the Doctor Who and everyone can kind of come up to my table and we could just start talking for hours about Doctor Who. Christian was one of those people that we'd be at the same cons and we'd start talking Doctor Who. And the next thing you know, he was told, hey, you know, maybe you should start doing a podcast. You really know who we need Doctor Who. And he kind of knew, you know, the usual suspects to round out. And he's like, hey, you want to do a podcast? I'm like, sure. I can buy a microphone. I can talk for an hour, as you could see. So here we are.
Were you listening to any podcast as well, or is it just something that you
stayed
to the one side of the microphone?
It was funny is that I think I started more on this side of the microphone first, rather than listening. We used to do when I'm in my early stages as a graphic artist, I did a lot of production art, and we used to do when Apple was just the whole podcasting thing was really getting out there. One friend of ours had had an Apple iPod, and he had the little podcaster radio thing that you could connect to it. I know people, I'm showing my age. And he would like zoom out and you could just plug out, you know, what radio station am I listening to? Oh, okay. You're 93.8. Okay, cool. And we could listen to all these different podcasts, but he was like our DJ. So I can't recall what podcasts there were, but this was like maybe in its infancy. Now I think a lot of podcasts, you're usually, if you're not on your Alexa, or if I'm in the kitchen baking and I'll just say, Alexa, play something, you know, play The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS. That's a nice plug. And she'll just start doing that. So I think there's so many podcasts out there now. And the great thing is a lot of them are also on YouTube. So you can kind of find more and more and more. And recommendations go a long, long way when just asking people, what do you listen to? This. Cool. I'll listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think we'll see if you can survive this next bit. Mike, I think she's ready for the geek seat.
Oh, I forgot to tell her that, you know, part of being in the geek seat is getting tied up and, you know, strapped down.
Oh, yeah. You forgot.
Oh, okay. Well, that's I threw my back out earlier. So, well, it's there. Don't worry about it. I'm kind of propped up in torture right now because I went to the chiropractor. So,
I will tell you this. This will help with your chiropractic. You know, it'll basically force you to stay in one spot. And it's supposed to be a very comfy chair. So it's okay.
This is not a comfortable chair, but we're good. Okay, let's do this.
Okay. All right. You ready for your first question, Melanie? All right. What was your favorite geek out moment?
Favorite geek out moment would be the first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con and saw and experienced everything. And it was like just going to the Super Bowl of Comic-Cons. And I will put a footnote.
When was it?
It was 8 years ago. So you're going to have to do the math, people. I'm not good at years and dates and times. But I know this would have been my ninth Comic-Con. Would have been.
Okay, so 2012.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, well, it's easy, you know, 10 minus 2, you know.
No.
I think I might have been there that year, or it might have been, I might have been the year before, because that's the only Comic-Con I went to. It was when Matt Smith and Amy Pond and Moffat were there for the first time.
Yeah.
So, and we waited 2 zillion hours for Hall H. It was awesome.
The Hall H line, yes, and that's insane. I mean, just if you've never been to San Diego Comic Con, if you can get tickets and all that fun stuff, try to go. It's an experience. when I was really in my heyday kind of going. That was also, I'm not sure if it was 2012 or not. Maybe it wasn't. It's 8 years, maybe it's seven. The first year I had gone was also the first year that Zachary Levi had done Nerd HQ. And that was like an ancillary kind of Comic-Con little event where it was just panels. It wasn't competing, but then it started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So that, but when you start meeting celebrities, you're seeing people that you see in, you know, in the fandoms that you know and recognize. And you're meeting the people, and this is where it's the biggest geek out moment, is you're meeting the people that you've never actually met face to face, but you know them and love them because of Twitter and all those other kind of things online where, you know, and when the internet was young, you weren't supposed to meet all these people. You weren't in real life. You always never used your real name. You had to make sure you had, and you're actually meeting at such and such for the first time. You're like, oh, I know you. Course. I love you. You're like one of my best friends in the world. That's, you know, I thought, you know, that was a big part of the geek out moment was that, just San Diego and everything about it.
That's understandable. What was your most disappointing geek out moment though?
When it was canceled this year, 2020. Usually 20.
Thank you, 2020.
You know, I think from now on, 2020 is going to show up on a lot of people's lists.
Yeah, I think 2020 is going to show up on a lot of people's lists. But I think other than that just being the easy softball answer, I think it's that part of how people always say you shouldn't meet your heroes. It's when you start delineating that line between, you know, you're finding out the people who absolutely they put out the content that you absolutely love. Let's just say Joss Whedon, for good and for bad, because there's stuff that I just we'll just use that as an example of love Firefly. Love the stuff that he's written and produced. Love what he did with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I got my picture with him. But then you kind of Astonishing X-Men. Oh my God, when he wrote that whole title is amazing. But then it's you start finding out more about them, and maybe that shine starts coming off because they're real people. And sometimes it gets even worse depending on what you read and whatnot. So that was my least favorite geek out moment, is when you meet your heroes, don't put them such on high pedestals. Remember, they're people too. They're real people.
They can get knocked off just as like you and I can. Yep, totally makes sense. What geeks you out the most?
Going to cons. Honestly, meeting people for the first time. I like to say that I'm an introverted extrovert, maybe an extroverted introvert. I've been okay with the whole quarantine thing. I'm okay with just talking to people through, you know, Zooms and stuff like that. I still feel connected. I still feel loved. I took to like a duck to water when Twitter and all the social medias came out, because I would just meet people through there. Mm-hmm. Not being able to interact with people, I miss that. But I also do miss at the convention space that I became more extroverted. I would talk to random strangers and build friendships that I would have never met these people in my entire life. So that's one thing I genuinely like really miss right now. And what I really, really also love about conventions is that little, I could be extroverted and then go back into my cave. Mm-hmm.
It's like your extended family reunion type thing. So totally understand that. What's your geek off?
Gatekeeping. Flat out gatekeeping.
You tell.
It's whenever somebody believes that they are the gatekeeper to every fandom, and they just don't realize that, look, it's a sandbox. It's like a sandbox in Skyrim. We can all go in here and play. Same thing with GTA or any other sandbox game. You don't own it. It's not yours. I'm sorry. We could go to a licensing expo and explain how you do not own anything. And if you would like to own something, how much it's going to cost you. But you don't own it. Everyone can go in here and play. And don't let anybody tell you that you can't go in here and love what you love, because, or that you don't belong, or you can't know enough of something. You're not a real fan. You want to grind my gears real quick, gatekeep and say somebody else isn't a real fan.
No, totally understand that. We've actually had people come up to us in tears and go, thank you, because we were at a podcast panel that we were doing, and this one woman who wanted to create a dramatic podcast was put down by other people about it. And she was like, you guys are so positive. And so, you know, it was the first time Mike and I put somebody into tears purposely, you know, so it was pretty awesome. We've had people, you know, do that, you know, accidentally, we put people in tears. But, you know, that's just a whole different story on itself. So it's pretty cool. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
I'll go with the softball answer. Any incarnation of the Doctor. Honestly, I think I would just go with any of the Doctors. Pick one.
I've never asked you, who's your Doctor?
It's going to be, I'm one of those people, in order to get multiple Doctors in there. I'm going to say Classic Who is the fourth Doctor, because you never forget your first Doctor. New Who's going to be the 10th Doctor, although we just found out that. And I always say 10th Doctor with an asterisk, because if we had more nine, I would say nine would be my Doctor, because got me back.
Well, we had big news on that yesterday.
More ninth Doctor. So yeah, that could change.
I know.
I can change.
I've just ordered mine.
Yep.
I've just ordered mine. So, okay. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
I should have a good answer for this, but I don't. I don't think I would have somebody that, I think I would definitely be like more, where I would start having a sliding scale on some people. Like if you think of one particular, you know, Doctor Who, it's like finding out like the extra little companions and going, oh, I could have, like if I met Clara, I'd be like, oh, I could have picked any other companion instead of you.
But I heard Jen is a wonderful person.
She's great. So yeah. It's like, but we're talking about the characters.
Okay. Or you can, whatever you wish. This is your segment.
I don't want to meet Clara. I would probably just yell at her. Go away. You overstayed your welcome too much already. Go away.
Bingo. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose? Is that with one M or two?
I know, right? There's so many. Yeah. And the thing is, when it comes to geek words, what my favorite things are, I think it's honestly, I don't have a specific one. I'm going to go broad here, and it's whenever somebody, it's that code we all speak in. And this is my word answer. It's that code we speak in when we say something that only other fans would get, and that you stop, you look at each other like, you're my people. Me and you, you're my people. After the con, which bar are you hanging out? We could just chit chat, you know? And it's those things. Right. So if somebody starts making like really, really deep, like one of my friends at my work, and it's IT department, never really spoke to him too often, but at one point he ended up making a comment, if you watched anything from homestarrunner.com, he goes, I was raised by a cup of coffee. And I just looked at him like, oh, it's a Homestar Runner fan. I know this. And then you just keep going. So that's my favorite just thing in general, is whenever somebody says some non sequitur that makes no sense, but you can, you know who you're talking to. Those are my favorite things.
Well, that's awesome. That is awesome. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Oh God, ideal occupation would be if I could be a portrait artist for anything Titan comics, and with my Doctor Who stuff, that would be ideal portrait artist. Like I can be like completely licensed of, hey, we want to put your stuff on a comic book cover. That would honestly be it. Me painting for a comic book, book covers. Done. Sold.
Fair enough. That is totally fair. I like that a lot, actually. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Editing. Only because I've done it before. Editing for anything like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's just too much eye strain. Nope. I've done editing. No. It's so hard. Bless everybody that edits in film. Oh God, I love you all so much. But I used to do like little independent horrors, and I was just wanting to scream at people because actors didn't understand continuity. I can't fathom putting in like just different types of SFX and then having your ADR recording on top of it. No, go away.
Bless you. Oh yeah, people. It's pure hell. It is pure hell. Trust me, I know. What is your ultimate geek fantasy? This is your final question, so you better make it good. This is for all the marbles. Just remember.
For all the marbles? This is almost like being able to say that you can pick any time machine you want.
I got a box of marbles right here for you. So
for all the marbles that he actually has, not just the metaphor. It would just be, honestly, it would be like just traveling the universe with the Doctor. Honestly, that would be my geek fantasy, finding out that you can that either time travel is real or that it's closer than we know, and either time and just space, and being able to make your own TARDIS and being able to see every galaxy, everything in the world, just to be able to hover over planets. And I'm a huge NASA. That's the other thing about San Diego Comic-Con. NASA is actually there. The people from the Jet Propulsion Lab are actually there. And if you ever didn't know where the heck to find me, my husband would be like, okay, if we'd split off for a while, he knew I was at the NASA booth just staring at things and just talking to rocket scientists. So that would be my absolute peak fantasy, is to have a spaceship that basically is the TARDIS, and that I could just hover and just out in different galaxies and just watch and just enjoy and stand there and with the help we'll paint what I'm seeing. Plain air art that in the non-air space, in the vacuum space.
Well, just think about all the mental images that you would get to be able to then create your artwork. Mm-hmm. It would just be so awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, Melanie, I got some great news for you, hon. You've made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations.
I survived, Joe.
Miss Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young lady what she's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the Easy.
The Easy. How long have we done this for?
I know, right? The ESO Network, a value easily worth all of the marbles in Mike's possession.
Yay!
You get the marbles, and that's not all. You also get Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
I'll go boil my water up right now. Dinner
exactly.
time, y'all.
It was so awesome to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you.
Where can people see your artwork and see and listen to your podcast?
Well, the podcast can be on any iHeart, Spreaker, Spotify, Alexa. Just look for The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS. Otherwise, you can go on Facebook, and it's the @ The Traveling TARDIS, and that can kind of show you all the different venues where you can listen to us just talk Doctor Who like crazy. Otherwise, my handle for all of the Twitterscapes and just Instagram, all those kind of fun things, is @PiecesOfMelee, M-E-L-E-E. It's the fighting style that I like gaming. So PiecesOfMelee, it's also .com, and that's where you can find my art and find out where I'm at. Right now, I'm just home. It's 2020, people. You know, that we're all at home. But, yeah.
We're all home. It's okay.
We're all home, yes. Excellent. Well, I'm glad you could spend some time from home to join us here on the
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. This has been just I love chatting with y'all. It's just so much fun.
That's cool. Well, hopefully we'll have you back on the show. Well, you're tied up. We didn't say we're letting you go. That's okay. It's okay.
Roll me in the corner, power me down for the night.
Exactly. You know, give you some Doctor Who to watch. It'll be okay. Yeah, we're good. So it's cool. So let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment, and we are going to be talking all about music. We're embarrassed to love.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We are coming to the point in the year when normally we'd be wrapping up the summer movie season. Of course, we haven't actually been to see any movies in the theater this summer, but thankfully, there has been some really cool stuff available on streaming to bail us out. One of those is the Umbrella Academy Season 2. I am almost done with the second season of this Netflix series, and oh my gosh, it's so good. In case you haven't seen this, I highly recommend catching up with the first season, and the second season is just as good. It's kind of like an X-Men superhero dysfunctional family feel. So yeah, kind of if you merged Arrested Development with the X-Men. It's a really fun series, really great. The second series involves some time travel back to the 1960s, which I think is a super fun concept. So yeah, if you haven't been able to stream that yet, highly recommend it. Speaking of streaming, Disney has made the interesting decision to release its live-action Mulan movie on Disney Plus. Apparently, just skipping theaters because most of the theaters remain closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, Mulan was supposed to come out in theaters earlier this year, so it's really interesting that they are going to be releasing it on Disney Plus in a pay-per-view strategy. The cost to stream the movie is $30, which honestly gave me more than a little pause. I really wanted to see Mulan, was highly looking forward to it, and was disappointed that, of course, we weren't able to see it in theaters. But the idea that you're already subscribing to Disney Plus and then have to pay $30 on top of that to watch it. I do kind of understand where Disney's coming from in a certain sense, because if you're going to have a bunch of people watching the movie together, like let's say you have a family of five, when you divide that by 30, well, that's not too bad of a price. But if you have somebody like me that is basically going to be streaming it alone in my basement, $30 is a pretty steep price, especially when you consider if I just wait a little bit, I might be able to just buy the DVD, and then not only can I watch it, but then I'll own it. So it's just really interesting. I'm very curious to see how it works as a marketing strategy, and to see if Disney makes a bunch of money or if it kind of flops in this format. We are in a super interesting time where people are kind of testing the waters with streaming, paying to stream on demand, this kind of content. As somebody who dearly loves movie theaters, this kind of scares me a little bit. I'll be honest about that, because I don't want to see the movie theater industry go under. I still personally believe that a movie theater is the best way to see a movie, just that whole experience. But I think it is also good that there are some people for whom theaters just aren't as doable of an experience, and there are some barriers there. So I think it's good to have some options available via streaming. So hopefully Hollywood can kind of learn a lot from this period, and we can reach a point where there's space for streaming and in movie theater experiences. But like I said, we'll be curious to see how Mulan does, and I think that we're going to see a lot of interesting trends and developments come out of this time that will continue to impact the entertainment industry. And that's it for my box office buzz this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog over on the ESO Podcast website. Since we haven't been having any new movies in theaters, I've actually kind of enjoyed the chance to go back and watch some older material. I recently finished up HBO's John Adams series and watched the movie Logan Lucky, and have both those reviews up on the ESO website.
We are Nerdlanta.
We got these filters. I think they're called pee poppers. That's
for popping peas.
Yeah. For popping all the peas.
Schwitty balls and pee poppers. Always a time.
Can a podcast be a reboot?
Oh, God, absolutely. Yes.
Yes.
That's awesome.
We are highly at a late
hour. You know, it's just always fun to talk about geeky stuff. And Atlanta is the place to do it.
I guess that's it. We play the promo.
That was an awesome promo.
Welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now we are going to look at music we're embarrassed to love. And oh boy, do we have long lists of that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of music out there, and some of it we might be sort of proud about, and some of it we might not. It's going to be interesting to discuss this topic, I think. And we've got some great people. We got our music crew back in the station, starting with the iconic rock person herself. Michelle Berg is here.
Hello.
Howdy. How you been?
Good.
Good? How's everything with the Rock Hall these days?
Rock Hall is kind of on pause. They had to cancel their induction ceremony. It will be on HBO only. So we don't know what's up with the class for next year. So we're all just waiting to see.
Gotcha. The Rock Hall itself is open, I understand.
Yeah, I think so.
Gotcha.
The museum.
Gotcha. Well, wear a mask, people. We also have Ricky and Bambi back with us.
Hello.
Howdy. How have you guys been?
Well, you know.
Ooh, there's a deadly silence there.
That was a real big pause I heard there.
I know, right?
You know, the world's been kind of crazy lately, and that makes it a little bit difficult to be a professional musician.
Absolutely. I do understand that recently you played your 15th year anniversary gig. Is that right?
That's right. Radio Cult has played now for over 15 years.
Wow. That's incredible. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And I guess the gigs are few and far between these days.
Well, we had two this weekend.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
And well, the gigs weren't incredible, but the fact that there were two of them were. We played a few shows. You know, a lot of people are just deciding to ignore the fact that there is a virus out there. Mm-hmm. And they're hiring us to play.
Boy.
It must be a weird challenge to play in this environment.
It's not a weird challenge to play in this environment. It's a weird challenge to interact socially with people in this environment.
Yeah. Sure. I try to wear a mask when we're not on stage. I try to wear a mask, and that still freaks a lot of people out.
That's not good. That is really, really not good. And, you know, I heard that Bambi went both ways, though. She became a drummer and a bassist this weekend.
Oh, yeah. This past weekend was weird. It's two shows in a row that I didn't play guitar or sing lead. It was bizarre.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's cool, though, that, you know, you're using this sort of downtime to pick up additional skills.
Yeah. Drumming is fun.
Yeah.
I loved that. That is so much fun.
You know, that's another thing we should probably at some point discuss, like, specific instruments. I think that would be kind of cool, because I think that would be really cool to get your thoughts on, especially since you've played so many different instruments, what's the differences are between them. But this week we are here to talk about music, in particular music that we might not be keen to reveal that we enjoy. This is a weird topic for me because on the one hand, I'm at the point in my life where I'm not really like embarrassed about anything I like. There were times very early on in my life that I, I was not fitting in with my classmates in junior high and before that. So music styles were, yeah. That was one of the things that was I was ridiculed for, actually. And I do say I was ridiculed for it because I grew up with my mom's 45s of Elvis. After Star Wars came out, I became a huge fan of movie soundtracks. So much so that when people ask me what kind of music I liked, I usually would say music that doesn't have words in it. Okay, I guess I'm a little embarrassed because then I discovered disco, of odd things. The first piece of music that I remember buying, I think with my own money, was at least pop music, was Casey and the Sunshine Band with That's the Way I Like It. That's it.
I see you.
And then I listened to Kiss 108, which was a disco station, soul music, that kind of thing in the Boston area. I listened to that for a while. But I also had ties with nerdy music. I remember one time we had to pick a piece of music that we played in front of the class in school. And I brought in my 45 of the theme song, The Greatest American Hero. And I got laughed at.
Believe it or not.
Exactly. Believe it or not.
Yes. Not at all.
And another time we were asked to bring in a piece of music that we liked. I brought in the soundtrack to Live and Let Die and played the theme song to that and was ridiculed as well. So I couldn't win.
Wow.
You know, Live and Let Die.
What? I know.
Maybe it wasn't your musical choices. Maybe it was just you.
Yeah, I have a feeling it was more the person bringing it to the masses than the songs themselves.
And that could be as well. So, but I know I didn't fit in because everybody else was listening to like Journey, REO Speedwagon, Kiss, AC/DC, that kind of thing. And I never cared
if I fit in with the music I liked and everything. It was, I liked what I liked, and because my parents raised us, you know, with all different types of music, all different styles and everything, and not just acid rock like some people are thinking and hippie music, but it was all different types, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it was just like, you know, I used to, like, during art class, I was the one who brought in mixtapes and stuff of, you know, and I introduced people to REM and Squeeze and, you know, Depeche Mode and The Cure and, you know, stuff like that. And people were like, ooh, what is this, you know, type thing. Because they were all listening to Journey and Top 40 and Rush and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was just like, which was good in its own right, but they didn't expand. And I hopefully was helping them do that.
Well, now that we've established that you were much cooler than I was back then.
Oh, I never said I never said I was cool, but you know, I did it anyway.
But Michelle, what do you have as sort of an example of something of music that you might be embarrassed to admit that you like?
I'm not embarrassed to admit anything.
All right, show's over.
I will take this opportunity to go on record and say that I think Culture Club's Do You Really Want to Hurt Me is a pop masterpiece. And the same for Wham. It's really a George Michael record, but it was credited to Wham. All She Wants Is, or Everything She Wants. Brilliant.
Wham is interesting because, yeah, I would imagine that if you were like a dude in back then when I was growing up, Wham was not something you admitted that you liked. At least not in my youth. I find it interesting now that a lot of people are, especially dudes that are my age, are like saying that it's cool that, you know, we, you know, Careless Whisper is a track that we all like, that means a lot to us. But back then,
Careless Whispers was a great makeout song.
Well, back then, you would not admit that you liked that song back then.
No, but it was great to have on the radio.
So yeah, and certainly, you know, the fashion. Well, back then too, music videos were huge, so you couldn't get away from. It wasn't just the music; it was the whole image of the bands. So if I said, for example, I liked Prince or I liked Duran Duran, which I did, or mm-hmm. even Culture Club, you know, it wasn't just the music that was involved. It was the image of those folks that that was counted against me as well. So, okay. Ricky and Bambi, what about you guys? Bambi?
I was actually going to start with Wham. I was going to say, it's like, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go specifically. I mean, I guess I'm not embarrassed about it. I just love that song. It puts a smile on my face every time it kicks on. I'm like, just makes me want to like wiggle in my seat or dance around or something. Yeah. So it's an instant good feel song to me. But I guess when I think of like stuff of being embarrassed about music, I guess as I got older, I stopped caring, but I know at one point when I was hanging around a lot of, I guess, metalheads, trying to point out that I liked Savage Garden was not the cool thing. I remember being brutally picked on in school because I was a really big like Jackson 5 and Michael Jackson fan.
Mm.
Kids just totally thought that was stupid. But I was like...
Really?
Now. So, I don't know. There you go.
Well, now there's sort of a lot of reasons to not like really trumpet the fact that you like Michael Jackson music.
Yeah.
But it's not, doesn't have anything to do with the music actually. which is weird because after he died, I remember people saying that now the music can be free. Like now you can enjoy the music without thinking of the man. But I don't know if that's true still.
Yeah, I like the music regardless of the man. But at the same time, I think a lot of the headlines, you know, I feel bad for him because a lot of the stuff, I don't think he actually did get in trouble for a lot of the stuff. It's like all that negative stuff that came out. I don't know. I don't know.
No, it's just stuff that some of that stuff we even never know the answer to, really.
Yeah. I mean, he was a weird dude, but. Dang, he could dance and write songs.
It's true. Ricky, any music come to mind for you as far as stuff that you're embarrassed to admit you like?
Not really. I guess at one point I was a really big fan of U2. That's the band that made me want to play music.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was at a new school in 10th grade. And we were separated into groups of two, or paired off to groups of two, to do whatever project we were doing. And because I was new and there were an odd number of people in the class, they just put me with these two guys who are already friends. And trying to be nice to the new kid, they said, "Oh, what kind of music do you like?" And I said, "Well, my favorite band is U2. And it's one thing to have kids just being jerks to you, but to have people who are really trying to be nice to you, just clearly not happy with what you're saying, that feels kind of lame. And so these two guys were like, "Oh, what kind of music do you listen to?" And I said, "My favorite band is U2. And they were both like, "Oh, really?"
Wow.
They were saying, "We like bands like Rush and Led Zeppelin. Aren't you a musician?" And I said, yeah, I am. And they're like, "You too, huh? Okay. All right." It's... So I wasn't embarrassed about liking you too, but at that moment I was a little bit embarrassed. But that was just like, you know, a moment. So that moment passed and, you know, I wasn't embarrassed after that.
Well, I certainly think that, yeah, I mean, as we've all kind of mentioned in the examples of, it depends on the circumstance, right? Where you're all of a sudden you're made to feel that way, which is weird. And particularly, with U2, I'm a little surprised, yes. But also, you know, there comes a point in time for some artists where they're really big and then they get too big, where there's backlash against them.
Well, this, I don't think, had anything to do with how popular U2 was. I think it's just U2 was never really a musician's band.
Mm.
Ooh, you know, bands like Rush and Led Zeppelin and Metallica, there are a lot of bands, Hendrix, there are a lot of bands and artists that if you're a musician, you tend to lean towards these bands because of what they did. Musically, you kind of think of music differently when you are someone who plays music. And especially when you first start playing music and it kind of affects the way you listen to music. There was probably a couple year period of time where I couldn't just listen to a song. I was constantly breaking down every song I listened to into, this is the bass part, this is the guitar part, this is the other guitar part, this is what the drums are doing, and sort of analyzing everything.
Yeah.
And I realized when that happened, I thought, man, this sucks. I just want to be able to listen to a song.
Yeah.
And it's like your brain there for a minute won't do that. And it went away after a while. But for a couple of years, like anytime I'd hear a new song, I couldn't just listen to it. I was like trying to learn it in my head and all the different parts. So I think musicians, especially when they first start playing music, they listen to music a little bit differently. And a lot of U2's songs maybe weren't the kind of songs that guitar players aspire to be able to play. And as a result, I was, you know, sort of questioned about my choice to like U2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know what you mean about the musicianship because when I was into filmmaking, there was a period where I couldn't watch a movie without analyzing it and seeing, like thinking about how it was made rather than actually just going to a movie and enjoying it.
I'm sure it's a similar thing.
And there is a sense of like that, you know, that musician's mentality sometimes. I think, you know, as far as, you know, we've talked about before with the Rock Hall, right? Like there's artists that they won't even consider because they feel like they're not worthy of being in the Hall of Fame, not because of whether they're rock and roll or not, but because just that someone's decided, oh, the keys really didn't play, so therefore they shouldn't go in, you know, that kind of thing. Or how dare you?
But like, they did really play.
Well, yes, right, exactly. But a lot of their, you know, and, you know, whether they wrote their hits or not, you know, that kind of thing. But yet there is a slant against the band because of just because they're not traditional musicians, right?
Oh, sure. But you also had, you know, people when you were in school, you know, even if they liked the music, just to be jerks, to make themselves look cooler, they always said, oh, those bands suck. I don't like those, you know, type things. And you had that quite a bit when you were in school. Yeah. And, you know,
that's going to happen with everything, right?
Yeah. You had people just being jerks to be jerks. People, you know, who I still know, because I don't really consider myself real friends with many people I did go to high school anymore. But I know so through Facebook, or I've talked to other people, and they used to say, hey, I used to love it when you used to bring the CDs and the music in, and you played some great stuff. And you were like, well, you never said that when we were in school.
Yeah.
So it was just like, you were, you know, pretty much a dick, you know, yeah. about it. You know, about it. You know, and, you know, and I've said that to them. And it's just like, yeah, I don't want to deal with it. And I don't really think it's really that great for to do and everything. Because, you know, my music taste has evolved over the years, as is all of us has. And, you know, when you like, oh, why didn't I like this? Or, oh, I secretly like this, or, you know, things like that. And it's pretty awesome when you go back and, you know, I've been over the weekend to get ready for this. I was watching a lot of YouTube and a lot of, you know, greatest, you know, hits of the 80s or the 70s, or, you know, little known bands. It's like, oh, I knew these bands. I know this band. I know this band. And, or one hit wonders. And it's just like, none of them I'm really embarrassed or never have been embarrassed to say I liked. You know, when I was a kid, I used to listen to Dr. Demento every weekend, you know, and I think I was the only 8-year-old who knew at the time at my school who knew the words to Poisoning Pigeons in the Park, you know, you know, stuff like that. So it's pretty darn awesome, you know. And, you know, when Weird Al popped up, it started becoming cool to like geeky type music. And, you know, then extended out with They Might Be Giants, and, you know, going through with, you know, a lot of the different new wave bands like Talking Heads and Devo, because they were geeks and, you know, being in these bands and everything. They weren't the hard metal, you know, that you had with the hair metal later in the 80s or the hard rock in the 70s. And it's just like, it was just interesting to see. And, you know, even, you know, as I got older, I started appreciating more bluegrass and country and, you know, Americana music. And, you know, I still don't do classical all that much. It puts me to sleep most of the time. But I, you know, my big guilty pleasure right now is a lot of Broadway music, you know, and stuff, show tunes.
Why is that? Why do you feel guilty about that?
Cause, well, I don't feel guilty. It's like a guilty pleasure because it's like,
Why is it just a pleasure?
Because a lot of times when, because just a lot of people, you know, for me, it's, you know, it's just like, because I can belt out the show tunes when I'm in the car by myself, you know, I'm singing along with them, even the stuff from Cats. Yes, I know. But, you know, it's.
Okay, that would be a guilty pleasure. Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't be embarrassed to like Cats.
No, hey, but.
I like Cats.
Not the musical, not the.
Yeah, but there's dancing cats in it. It's awesome.
I'm kidding, yeah. Of course.
Magic Woman Mephistopheles is awesome.
I
Bambi was the one person who went to go see the movie at the theater.
In costume, yes.
Of course.
In costume.
Actually, I haven't seen the movie. I'm sorry. I went to see the like the actual play.
Oh, the play?
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've
First
seen
time it. I saw it, too. It was awesome. Wow.
Yeah, I think we should say that if this already isn't clear, I mean, there should be no, we don't encourage people to try to shame anybody for listening to anything, no matter what it is. So, but based on our experiences, there have been times where, like I said, certainly I've been uncomfortable admitting to some of the music that I like. And Mike, you made an interesting point too, because you said, in order to prepare this, you were watching and listening to a lot of 70s stuff and a lot of 80s stuff. And I also find it interesting that, you know, depending on the way that the trends swing, sometimes whole decades of music are labeled as bad or good, right? There's like, when sometimes when people say 70s music, people go, ugh, or people like 80s music. Oh,
God,
people
no.
think of, you know, because I remember, and it goes through a cycle, I think, because for a while their 80s music was kind of, it was popular during the 80s, but then in the 90s, it was kind of crapped on. And then in the last few years, it's kind of been cool again to sort of like the 80s music, whether it's, you know, the big artists at the time, U2, Duran Duran, Michael Jackson, Prince, that kind of thing, or, you know, even the one-hit wonders like Lamal or, you know, the Naked Eyes or, you know, those guys.
Well, actually, that started heavily in the year 2000. That's when the big 80s resurgence really started to come about. And everything tends to go in that 20-year cycle. So, you know, in mm-hmm. the 70s, the 50s were really popular. In the 80s, the 60s were really popular. In the 90s, the 70s were really popular. So you get to 2000 and it's the 80s turn. But what was interesting to me, and it may come, this may be biased by the fact that I was in a band playing 80s music,
mm-hmm.
but it really felt like the 80s popularity stuck around after 2010 a lot more than most decades stick around at the end of that 20-year period.
Yeah, 90s stuff's making a comeback really big.
Yeah, right, 90s stuff is definitely getting popular right now. But at this point, you know, mm-hmm. we have passed that.
Yeah,
we're like at the tail end, very, very end of that 20-year.
Yeah.
You know, it's 20 years since the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem to be as strong of a resurgence as the 80s was.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that I find interesting, being around kids a lot,
mm-hmm.
they say things like, it must have been really weird when people had to pick a type of music that they liked.
Yeah.
You know, the kids don't really understand this whole genre thing. You know, I talk about my friends used to be metalheads back in whenever, and they all listened to metal and they'd make fun of each other for listening to anything that wasn't metal. And the kids can't even wrap their head around it because all of these kids have playlists that just include everything, every kind of music that they like.
Yeah.
And they don't really say, oh, I'm into classic rock or I'm into punk or I'm into whatever. They just either like a song or they don't. And the genre doesn't matter at all.
I think a lot of that's because now people don't go and listen to radio stations. And I think radio stations swayed a lot of public opinion of music. Now certainly, you go and just pick out a specific song you like and put it on your own playlist.
That was certainly the case with disco. I think a lot of disco's bad rap came completely from the DJs.
I like disco.
Me too. And
but there's a lot of songs from that era because, you know, back then we didn't have, you know, iPhones or MP3 players or something like that. And you basically, you either had albums or cassettes or you listened to the radio. And a lot of it was top 40 radio that played the songs to death. There, and when I was watching those videos on YouTube, there were a couple songs that still to this day put the hair on the back of my neck going up, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I get Rickrolled one more time this weekend, I'm going to scream.
Well, and that's something else we kind of talked about a little bit too, is that sometimes a band or a song is just played so much and it's so popular that there's a backlash against it. So, you know, and that, I think, I don't know, is that what happened to Nickelback?
Ugh. I didn't like Nickelback when they... Actually, I guess no. I'm thinking Creed. Nickelback, I'm like, they're tolerable. They have really good guitar tone.
Well, Creed's another example. I mean, both of them...
I didn't like them when I first heard them.
Those had, like, debuts and that were huge, and then all of a sudden, it's not cool to like them anymore.
Well, for Creed, I think a lot of it might be because the singer's a dick.
Yeah, I just didn't like the music.
But, you know, when you've got mediocre music and you're a dick, then it begs people to put a license plate on the front of their car that says, even Jesus hates Creed, which I've seen.
At the mall.
wait, you saw the band play at the mall? Or you've seen?
No.
I'm like, the man, I can tell. I remember as a field trip in my Spanish class, we went and saw Menudo play.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
I bet that was awesome.
I don't, well, it wasn't the Ricky Martin Menudo.
Oh.
Okay. It was like the next generation after that or something. I don't know.
Did they do the whole dance routine?
Yeah. That's yeah, cool. They did. The only thing I remember that was the reason that I remember it is because on the way there we saw them filming Spencer for Hire, and so we saw Robert Urich and everything. That was cool. That was the coolest part of the trip, actually, for me. But there is like a sort of a, well, I mean, that's the other thing too. If we find out about an artist about, you know, whether their politics don't agree with ours or whether they do something socially that's stupid or whether they tweet something dumb or whatever, that sort of sways whether or not we kind of like them too. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and there's only so many times you could listen to Jimmy Buffett over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, that would be once for me.
Mine's Dave.
That would just
I'm
be
not
once.
A Dave Matthews fan.
Yeah.
I saw part of the Dave Matthews concert before leaving early.
Well, good on you.
Boring to me.
Is that a badge of pride?
No, just a comment. And honestly, the reason that I left early had more to do with how crowded Lakewood was and the fact that I was standing on such a sharp incline near the very back. It was just uncomfortable, and it was so packed, nobody could sit down. It was just absolutely packed. And I went with my drummer's brother, and we hung out for about six songs. And I said, "Are you enjoying this?" And he's like, "No, my ankles are killing me." I said, "Do you want to leave?" And he said, "Yeah, let's get out of here." Which would be a completely different reason from the reason that Bambi and I left the Dream Theater concert early. That was because we didn't enjoy the music.
I was like, I appreciate their talent. They're very obviously talented. It was just so boring. I was just like, I feel like elevator music only with distortion. So that's just like, yeah, I'm bored.
I don't know why you got to talk down about elevator music.
Yeah, some elevator music's actually really cool, actually.
Well, you know, it's getting bad and you're getting old when the elevator music is what they're playing that you grew up with and everything. Yeah. It's 70s and 80s music. It's like, oh, come on. No, REM. No.
The first time I was in Kroger or Publix somewhere, it's a grocery store, and I heard them play The Clash, I was like, oh, I'm old. I'm really old. Thank you, for making me feel old.
I'm like, when these kids are talking about how Justin Bieber is a really old band, like artist, yeah, his music is really old. I'm like, oh, it's Justin Bieber.
I've only walked out of one concert once because I was falling asleep, and that was Rufus Wainwright, and he was just putting me to sleep, wow. And. It was cool because it was free for me to see because he was playing at this music festival called Bumbershoot out in Seattle, which they take the whole Seattle center and turn it into multiple stages, including the stadium and the opera house. And it's really awesome what they do. And so they have trailers set up with stages, and it was just awesome. So when we went, that year we went to go see Rufus Wainwright, me and a friend of mine. And he was like, "Are you bored?" I said, "I am falling asleep here." He said, "There's this band called Great Big Sea from Canada, which is an Irish Celtic, you know, Newfoundland band. And they blew the socks off everything we saw that weekend. And it was so worth it to leave Rufus Wainwright." So I thank him for that. So
thank you for
which is pretty
me.
Exactly. So thank you, because I wouldn't have discovered Great Big Sea if it wasn't for that. So it was pretty awesome.
So has there been any music that you found that you didn't like growing up that you now like, that you now appreciate? There's stuff that you're like, oh, man, I hated that growing up, but now I finally appreciate that.
Definitely.
Yes.
While you're thinking, I know
let
that.
Let me think.
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, one that took me a long time like to appreciate was Paul Simon. When I was younger, every time a Paul Simon song would come on, I would just be like screaming, like, get it off. I hate this. But in college, I learned to appreciate him. He came out with, that's when he came out with Graceland, and which I love that album. And then I started looking at his other, that caused me to look at his other work, his earlier work with different ears, I guess.
So you didn't like Simon and Garfunkel stuff? And
no,
stuff like that.
Well, and I think part of that too is because rather than hearing Simon and Garfunkel like on the radio or discovering it, you know, by my parents or something like that, I was taught that in school. Like that came up in like our music teacher, like had like, you know, was playing like, you know, Sounds of Silence and all that kind of stuff. And I think when you're, when it's sort of thrown at you, like academically rather than, you know, from another source, I think that kind of affects you too.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, so, I'm going to admit something pretty big here real quick.
Okay.
Growing, stop the president. Growing up, I did not like the Grateful Dead. And I did not like a lot of the 70s.
I can totally understand that.
No, but no, because literally, you know, the Grateful Dead, the Allman Brothers, you know, all that type of stuff that my parents were listening to, Jefferson Airplane and stuff, I didn't start appreciating until my teen years. And, you know, so here, you know, liking the music and slowly getting into it more and more, and then going to Grateful Dead shows and stuff on my own without my parents. It was more like that, because I stopped going to Grateful Dead shows with my mom and dad probably when I was like 7 or 8. And, but, you know, before that, you know, I had seen Pink Floyd. I had seen, you know, stuff like, you know, Pink Floyd, the Allman Brothers, the Doobie Brothers, you know, the Grateful Dead, you know, bands like that, you know, Hot Tuna, you know, all those kind of bands that are now considered major classic rock at the time. You know, my parents took us because we were little kids and they didn't want to get babysitters. So they took us to the concerts with them. And, you know, but that stopped around, like I said, 7 or 8, probably 13, 14 is when I started listening to my parents' albums. You know, when I started making my own mixtapes and stuff like that and starting to appreciate, you know, what it was to listen to that type of stuff and becoming more and more appreciative of it. And, you know, now even, you know, going back and, you know, having my mom was a huge Bee Gees fan. Now I appreciate the Bee Gees. For many, many years, I was like, oh, I couldn't listen to, you know, any of them. I couldn't listen to Barry Gibb with that high voice or, you know, stuff like that. It was just really tough.
Well, I got two.
Mm-hmm.
I'd mentioned earlier that U2 is the reason that I wanted to be a musician. When I first heard U2, I hated them.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. So they went from being a band that I hated to my absolute number one favorite band.
Now, what happened there? Like, what did you hear first?
First song I heard by them was Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And I just awesome thought it was at the time that I first heard it, I thought it was a crappy song.
Wow.
And then when the Joshua Tree came out, I heard like a rock block of 3 songs from the Joshua Tree. And I thought it was amazing. And I went out and got the Joshua Tree and I loved every song on the album, loved the whole album. And then I got Unforgettable Fire and I loved that whole album. And I went back to War and I was like, oh, this is that song that sucks so bad. But it didn't suck so bad anymore.
You know, acquired and taste.
I had gotten used to the way the band sounded. And even though War has never been my favorite album, I liked it a lot better coming back to it than I did when I first heard it. The other band, which took me a very long time to be able to listen to, and I did not like this band at all. I would change the station if they came on. I didn't like anything about them. Nothing was Queen.
Whoa.
Wow.
But I absolutely loved the soundtrack for Highlander, which was also Queen, but I didn't know that. And I thought that one song from Iron Eagle that I didn't know who it was by was a really great song. Didn't know it was Queen. And, you know, so there were a few Queen songs that I really liked. But usually when I would hear Queen, I just hated them and I would change the station and I had zero interest in listening to Queen.
Interesting.
The way that I got into them, I'm pretty sure, was through Metallica, because Metallica covered Stone Cold Crazy. And I really liked that cover. And somebody was like, well, this is the original. If you want to hear it, that's actually not so bad. Still don't like the guy's voice, but it's not so bad. It took me a long time to be able to listen to Freddie Mercury.
Wow.
Unless he was doing a soundtrack, apparently.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Well, I do say that on that note, probably the Queen album that I've listened to the most is the soundtrack to Flash Gordon. And it's funny because, the early days when Michelle and I were getting to know each other, I knew she was a huge Queen fan. So we had that in common. Only my favorite album was her least favorite album. I really liked Flash Gordon. And that was the low point of the Queen discography for her. So I don't know if that's changed at all.
I had the band for me, hard switch, went from could not stand them to just like instantly, I'm like, they're awesome, AC/DC. And it's because I learned how to play guitar. I went from hating them and I got a guitar and now I'm like, AC/DC is so freaking awesome. Yeah.
There's a difference between like playing the music and just listening to it for you?
Any musician.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But now that, you know, like playing it, now it's like I enjoy listening to them now. Like, it's hard for me to imagine not liking them anymore.
Was there a particular song that changed it around for you?
I learned how to play Highway to Hell specifically.
Gotcha.
That was it. I mean, and after that, you know, I learned, you know, You Shook Me All Night Long, whatever it was we needed to learn for our shows. But yeah, I was like, they've got such freaking awesome guitar riffs. Yeah.
Did you think of one, Michelle?
I remember back in the mid-80s, I was working at the record store and the How Will the Wolf Survive by Los Lobos. Oh. My 80s ears weren't attuned to that at the time.
Mm. That was a wonderful album, though.
It really is.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, had to acquire that taste.
I think sometimes, yeah, it just depends on where you're at too, you know, as far as what kind of mood you're in, you know, depending on what kind of music you're going to want to listen to and the time, you know, sometimes music just has to hit you at the right time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you guys are playing, since you've played a lot of like, you know, cover of a lot of tracks, are there any particular songs that you can think of that, you know, were really popular and then not really popular, or not really popular then suddenly people are requesting them?
Yes, several. One of the big ones was, and this didn't go from super popular to everybody hates it, mm-hmm. but it went from super popular to eh. And that would be Pour Some Sugar on Me from Def Leppard. For a little while, it was just like you could play that song and everybody would go nuts. And then it kind of changed to nobody really wanted to hear it for a little while. Mm. And then now I guess it's kind of I like this song. But it's still not back to where it was there for a minute. Another one is Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah, that's wild.
That used to be like...
goes over anywhere.
Yeah.
Play anywhere would go over.
Yes. And now sometimes people get into it, depends on where you are, but sometimes it's the song where everybody goes to get a drink.
We're not going to take it seems to always go over though. That's one that seems to have never died. And that kind of surprises me. Twisted Sister. People like that song. I like the song, but it just surprises me that so many people enjoy that song. hilarious.
There are a lot of songs that are really crowd dependent.
Oh yeah, like I noticed we'll do Bye 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 by NSYNC, and it's like half the crowd starts doing the little hand dance moves and stuff while other people are looking around like, what are we listening to? So yeah, and then that one amuses me because I think we did it kind of as a joke, but it's like, wow, people really dig this. And I mean, I love this song. I actually really like that song. That would be a guilty pleasure, right? Because that's one I was like, yeah, that's an awesome song.
Sure.
And a weird thing happened with Prince's music when Prince died.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It went from people liked Prince, you know, and when we would play Purple Rain,
they're like, yeah, it's
Prince. People would be like, oh, I like this song. But the first time we did the song where I was the singer, I didn't know the words. So I just made up words. And that went over so well because I sang about Taco Bell that I didn't learn the words. I would just sing about Taco Bell every time we'd do the song and it would go over like crazy. And eventually I said, you know, I sing this song so much, I should learn it. So I learned the words and we played the song and nobody cared. They didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, it just became a filler song.
So I went back to singing about Taco Bell. When Prince died, I did what I did every show. I had done it easily over 100 times, probably closer to several hundred times. But when Prince died, we did the song with the changed lyrics several times. Every time people would just lose their minds in anger because all of a sudden they were the biggest Prince fans in the world.
Yeah.
So that was really weird. It went from being something that people would tolerate because we changed the lyrics, they enjoyed it, to something that it was now offensive that I was changing the lyrics. And that's never happened with anything else.
Yeah. People made fun of, when George Michael died, it was like a joke. But when Prince died, it was insanely serious.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're both, you know, insanely talented musicians. But that's that, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. That's interesting. Anything else, Mike? Anything else from you as far as tracks that or music that you might have changed your mind on?
Well, not what I changed my mind on. Some people from what still to this day think it's kind of weird if they listen to like one of my mixes or on my iPod. I love jingles. I love commercial jingles to go to, you know, for like stuff from the 50s, 60s, 70s. And, you know, the old commercials that you used to hear, you know, plop, plop, fizz, fizz, oh, what, you know, stuff, exactly, you know, stuff like, you know, my baloney has a first name, it's, oh, you know, so it's stuff like that. It's just, it's awesome stuff. And that I can honestly say is a guilty pleasure that I love listening to. That, you know, sometimes Judy's like, I can't believe we're listening to this. And, you know, stuff. It's awesome to do. And, you know, I used to raise William on it. William used to know, you know, what do you have, a hungry man, the man, you know, and it's just like awesome, you know, and, you know, this bud's for you, you know, the whole thing. And it's just like, he knew all those things. Oh, the biggest mistake I ever did, though, was teaching him, what's up, you know. And, oh, God, we had that one for months going on, even when we were into for sushi. Hey, Dad, wasabi, you know, and it was just, you don't do that to an 8-year-old. I made the mistake. You know, I paid for it, so I do understand that. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
When I was growing up, my parents had one of the albums that they played a lot was a 2-record set of Barry Manilow Live. And I don't hate Barry Manilow. There's some songs out of Barry Manilow I like, although he's definitely, I guess, one that you could easily put in that category of maybe guilty pleasure because he does have, a lot of people don't like Barry Manilow. You don't even have to change his music to Muzak, right? Like, it just fits in the elevator, right? Album.
The cool thing with Barry Manilow, though, is he wrote so many things that you didn't even know that he wrote.
Well, that's what I was about to say. On that live album, he had a medley of all these jingles that he wrote. Mm-hmm. Like, because he wrote tons of jingles for companies, for commercials and whatnot. I think some of the ones that you just sang, he kind of did. So I think he did You Deserve a Break Today. Yeah. I think
I was about
his.
I was about to sing that one.
Yep. Like a Good Neighbor, I think was his.
That was his?
Maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to review it. But I mean, I was just amazed listening to that part of the album all the time going, I know like all those songs. And, Barry Manilow got paid, man.
The brothers Gibb did stuff like that. The Bee Gees, they wrote a lot of hits for other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, Prince, who you had mentioned earlier, did also.
Yeah.
You know, the Bengals owe their career to Prince.
Well, what's his name? From It's Raining Men.
Paul Schaefer.
Yeah. He wrote some other stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. He produced a bunch of people.
Yeah. But he was also at one point part of the Blues Brothers band.
Yeah.
But because he wasn't in the movie though, because he was under contract to Saturday Night Live at that time. Mm. But it's interesting. But yeah, well, think about Neil Diamond wrote a lot of the Monkees songs, you know, and you had so many different, people at the time, doing that, John Denver wrote stuff for the Mamas and the Papas and Peter, Paul and Mary and stuff like that until he struck it out on his own. So, it just depends. Same thing with Barry Manilow was the keyboardist for Bette Midler before he struck it out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole nother podcast on itself.
I think both Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton wrote songs for tons of other people.
Oh yeah.
So, and they would write songs they were known as country, but they would write songs for other, genres, I guess.
I keep thinking Dolly Parton, 9 to 5. That is a disco song. I mean, I can't hear it as country at all. There is no country in that. It is purely disco.
The Eagles.
Yeah.
The Eagles, before they were the Eagles, were studio musicians, backing band.
They were Linda Ronstadt's backing band.
Yep. And then more recently, Lady Gaga was writing hits for people before she went out on her own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. It's pretty amazing when you see stuff like that. And, it's just like, oh, these people did this for this band. And, it's just pretty darn awesome when you see that. And you go, oh, that's what they did before that. And it's awesome.
Bruce Springsteen wrote hits for lots of people before he had his own first hit.
Yeah.
His first hit, he had written for the Ramones.
Didn't Tom Petty write a bunch of other people's hits too?
Yes, mm-hmm. But he also took a lot of people's songs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He cared.
Touché. Well, yeah, because Springsteen wrote, Blinded by the Light for Manfred Mann. And he also did, for Patti Smith, Because the Night.
Because the Night.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and there's a couple others that he did also. Well, Fire by the Pointer Sisters. Yep.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Well, any sort of last words on music that you love that other people may not? I guess we'll use that term. Michelle, anything else that you could think of or anything else that you were thought about that you wanted to sort of talk about?
Music I love that other, I've gotten into Kishibashi and it's very hard to explain him to other people. Very hard. It's hard to explain a beatboxing sampling violinist.
Yes, I would say that too. And I've seen him.
You've seen him.
I couldn't. It is hard to describe. I think to Bambi's point earlier, it's more, there's I don't think we have as much in common with, I don't think there's a case of oversaturation as much anymore, because there's not really a venue that everybody is like forced to listen to with bands anymore or artists. So everybody has to reach out. What's that?
The grocery store.
Well, yeah, there's that. But that's all like, you know, that's all stuff from the 80s and 90s now.
Well, actually, a friend of mine's daughter worked at the grocery store. It was at a Kroger. And we were talking about the band Yes, and she didn't know who they were. And I said, I said, they're the band that has that song with the line, "Mallards fly out of the sky and they stand there." And she's like, "That is not the line of a song." I said, "Yeah, it's the line of a hit song." So the next time I saw her, she said, "They play that song every hour at the grocery store, and I can't not hear it now."
I have noticed Kroger has very good music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Bands, you know, you hear like sometimes bands like the Wood Brothers or bands like like Carbon Leaf, and, you know, some early, you know, more like Americana, or what they called now Newgrass, like Drive-By Truckers and stuff like that, Jason Isbell and, you know, stuff like that. You hear at the grocery store, it's like, what? Right? This is not what we grew up with.
That's Southern culture on the skids.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
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 Any last thoughts, Bambi, Ricky?
No. I don't know what to say. I'm just like, I like so much stuff, everything from Dead Mouse to Michael Jackson to Rammstein to Typo Negative and Aerosmith, and I don't know. I'm kind of open to it all. NSYNC.
Wow.
Justin Timberlake. Digging on some of Billie Eilish's stuff. So yeah. What about you, Ricky?
I don't know. I like everything from the Ramones' first album to half of the second album. So I feel like I'm pretty diverse.
It's a huge range. That's a huge range. Mike, any last thoughts from you?
No, I like everybody else, my music listens are quite diverse. Anything from, you know, classical to, you know, country to bluegrass to newgrass. Some rap, some R&B, a little of hip hop, but then when you get into classic rock, punk rock, stuff like that, I love. Not a big fan of modern top 40 all that much, but that's just me. And, you know, I'm open. Well, there is some decent stuff.
But no, I mean, overall, I don't even know what top 40 is. There isn't even a top 40. Like, how do they determine that?
There is. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, exactly. But
it's determined by the number of streams and the number of downloads.
Gotcha. Exactly. And but it's interesting because nowadays you have, you know, you don't have a Casey Kasem like we did growing up. Yeah, you know, American Top 40.
I can hear that. When you say his name, I hear him.
Oh, exactly. Everybody does. Oh, of course.
Coast to coast.
Yep.
Exactly. Hey, Casey Kasem, coast to coast. Yeah, but it's interesting because nowadays, you know, if I wanted to know what the big top hits were of that year, I would have to listen to the Weird Al Polka to hear what he would, you know, what he would be parodying for that.
Yeah, that's the more he comes out with the newer parodies, the less I know that the original material. So, right.
But the last one he did was the Hamilton Polka. Awesome soundtrack, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's a good one.
Awesome. Well, once again, thanks, guys. And I think the general rule is, like, you know, just like what you like, right? And don't be ashamed about it. And if you want to tell us about it, let us know. We will be right back after this message to close the show.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about what to check out on Shudder. So Shudder is a streaming service like Netflix and Hulu, but it focuses on horror movies and horror television shows for the most part. They have some original series and then a lot of movies that are older and newer in the horror genre. I'm going to give you my top four original series that you should check out on Shudder. So I'm going to start out with my favorite all-time show on Shudder, which is Creepshow, the series. So this is a really fun anthology series. Each episode has two stories. It has its campy episodes, it has its spooky episodes, but it still has that feeling of the old Creepshow movies in there as well. And it's such a fun watch, and I just highly recommend this one. Up next is A Discovery of Witches. This is based off of a series of books, and it follows a historian named Diana Bishop. She is regularly denying her heritage as a witch, and she accidentally calls up a bewitched ancient manuscript, and then mystery ensues. This is also another really fun watch. It is a more modern show, and so you don't have to, you know, you can just sit back and relax and enjoy it. Next up is Joe Bob Briggs' The Last Drive-In. Now, this is a horror host double feature type show where each episode he does two movies, and it's just old school horror host feel to it. It's a lot of fun, and so it's just a really nice, like, nostalgia kick. And lastly, The Deadlands. Now, this series is wonderfully beautiful, and the storyline is also super intriguing. So basically, this dishonored warrior has died, but he's sent back to Earth to figure out why that those that are dying are not being sent to the afterlife. He's accompanied by a young woman named Mehe, and together the two of them have to figure out what has happened to their land and all the otherworldly things that are going on there. So that is also a really, really cool visual and storyline-wise watch. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
So let's go wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. We want to thank everyone for joining us. Ricky and Bambi, you're back on the road, I guess, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
So what's going on? Where are you guys going to be?
We'll tell you after it happened.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
At this point, it feels like shows get booked last minute because people don't know what's going to happen, or they get rescheduled. So it's canceled or rescheduled. So I don't really know when we're going to play again. We have tentative not coming up, but...
So just keep on checking your website or Facebook?
Facebook. I haven't updated the website in forever. I keep forgetting to.
That's cool. That is awesome.
Yeah,
Radio Cult on Facebook. But thank you guys so much for being here. And of course, Michelle, thank you for always, you know, being there for us to give us your music opinion and such.
You're welcome. Such as it is.
And your iconic rock segments every week.
Exactly. It's pretty darn awesome. I've had people come up and say they really like them.
Thank you.
They like them and say, you know, or when you're missing, I always get an email. Did you forget to put Michelle's segment in this week? And it's like, no, I don't.
Wow. That's an amazing surprise. Thank you.
No problem. Anything you want to shout out about?
Not much going on.
Wow, that's like everybody. Wow, that's like everybody.
2020, the year that wasn't. What can you say?
I know that she's preparing her next blog post, so tune in for that because that's going to be a massive one.
It's going to be quite long. Yes.
Yeah, it's huge. It's really cool.
The War and Peace of blog posts.
Awesome. Yeah, go.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
We're definitely in the worst of times.
And of course, Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, sir.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you got to shout out about?
I do. You know, we're talking about music. And look, I know that it's hard on a lot of artists and it's hard on a lot of venues now. And there's some legislation that's being proposed to help a lot of the venues that are struggling right now. It's called Save Our Stages. You can go to saveourstages.com to find out more information about how you can get involved, even if it's just sending an email to your local representative, just letting them know, hey, help support this because time's running out, at least as far as these particular legislations goes. And, you know, if the musicians don't have places to play, you know, it's going to be hard when we come back. So from this. So just check that out.
No, please do, folks. These venues are so hanging on to strings right now anyway. And a lot of times they survive by people buying drinks and food and items like that. A lot of times they don't, you know, make that much from the bands actually playing there. And so it's really tough. And 2020 is pretty much throwing it all out the window. So hopefully, you know, keep an eye out for this type of stuff in multiple cities. I know it's not just here in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is nationwide.
It's nationwide. And so folks, please, you know, try to help out how you can. From all of us here at the ESO Network and on Earth Station One, we're all music fans. We're all performance fans. And we're not just talking music, folks. We're also talking live theater. We're talking, you know, all different types of arts that need our help right now. And
yeah, this particular legislation affects even like the Center for Puppetry Arts. So,
exactly. So
like all these centers like that.
This is also museums and stuff, you know. So yeah. It's, you know, it's everything. So folks, if you get a chance, please, please, you know, take care of it. My shout out real quick is some really bad news today for folks who are into DC Comics and also over at Warner Brothers. Basically, huge, huge cuts coming down the pike. And a lot of people who, some are friends of the show, some people who listen to the show, supporters of the shows have lost their jobs. Huge cuts and everything. And I think as 2020 keeps on going on and this is a new reality we're living in, it's going to be happening more and more. And folks, you just got to be careful, be thankful for what you got and, you know, try to help those in need. And it's going to be seeming like more and more people are going to be in need. So please, if you can, you know, just try to be decent to them. I'm not talking financially even. I'm just talking, just be decent to other people. That's, you know, that's something missing in today's reality, it seems like, in a lot of ways. So, come on. Let's go.
You have to ask people to be nice to each other.
Yeah, it is kind of sad. And, you know, I don't want to get into any politics right now. It's not worth it. And it's just people are being very ignorant and being very bullheaded. And we're better than that. And folks, let's just, you know, be well, love each other, and be very thankful. And thank you to everyone who's listening to us in India, by the way, for making us the 51st most popular hobby podcast on Apple Podcasts. That's right, in India. That's right. So thank you. We appreciate it. Now let's get into the top 50 on other countries too. You know, every time we think nobody's listening, you guys surprise us. We really do. And we want to thank you for it. On behalf of myself, Mr. Mike Gordon, Michelle, Ricky, Bambi, we all thank you for listening tonight. And we'll see you here next week on Earth Station One when we are talking about Some Like It Hot. That's right. Darren's back and he has us with Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon and also the beautiful Marilyn Monroe. It should be a lot of fun. Until then, we will see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace and be safe.
And wear a mask.
Yeah, watch your hands.
You've been listening to the Air Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.